Welcome to our second episode podcast. I will be hosting. I'm Tony. I'm the talent manager here at Life Plus. And I'm also joined with a couple of mental health first aiders. And the reason that we are doing this podcast is to support and share what Life Plus does around mental health. I think it would be really great if you guys could introduce yourselves, if you could let us know who you are, what your role is, and kind of how long you've been a mental health first aider would be great.
So I'm Pina. I am looking after a group of customer care administrators as their senior, together with my team leader. So that would be my role. And I became mental health first aider for a year.
Perfect. Thanks, Pina.
I'm Callie. I'm the HR manager. I become a mental health first aider. I want to say I was one of the first in the group at Life Plus to become a mental health first aider. So I think it was about 5-6 years ago. And that's something that we're quite passionate about in the HR team as well. So all the HRAs are all mental health first aiders as well. So we can support the business.
So I'm Drew. I am a talent coordinator here at Life Plus. I have been with the business for 3 years now. The reason I kind of wanted to get involved in this podcast was just because I've got a real kind of interest in how the brain works, how the mind works. And I think it's really important that we share and have conversations around kind of mental health. I think it's a really, really important part of work and life just in general.
My name is Martijn. I've joined Life Plus around 3 years ago myself as well. I'm the senior of the Dutch team for the last 2.5 years, I would say. Yeah, I've joined the podcast because it seems very interesting. It's the first time for me to be attending this one. And I think it would be good fun to share the thoughts that everyone has about it, the aspect around mental health in general, but also to give a male's perspective, as we haven't had that one before. So I think that will be interesting to see where this is heading.
Thank you so much. What would be really great to understand is, why did you become a mental health first aider, Pina?
I think one thing is, it is reassuring for myself to know what to do. If someone needs someone to listen to them, if they're going through something. My personality as well, because I like to help people. I want to do the right thing doing so. And psychology in general is very interesting to me as well. And mental health is something that is very, very important to me as well, because I know quite a few people who have struggled with mental health.
Thanks, Pina. Kelly?
I think mine's a mixture, actually. So I think it's great that Life Plus gives colleagues the opportunity to become a mental health first aider here. And it is a bit of a twofold. So work-wise, been faced with some circumstances quite a few years ago. We've had to deal with different areas as well. I'm not going to go into detail, but that impacted myself, it impacted the team and various other colleagues as well. And I think that just highlighted the fact and the need for having mental health first aiders, as you know, having that support network there for colleagues, and also on a personal level for my personal life and circumstances that I've been through as well.
Yeah, thanks, Kelly.
So I became a mental health first aider is because I was already for a while before I actively started looking into it to join it in Life Plus, looking into podcasts, watching them, reading books about mental health first aid, and also because I liked to help people in general. I think that's one of the qualities I have, is to engage with other people and to help them. But also because in my background, it was in my family's background, it was a relevant topic. So I thought, well, this will give me the option to delve into that deeper and to actively try and make a change for people.
Have you ever needed to reach out for support? And I guess, would you feel comfortable reaching out for support if you needed to?
I mean, me personally, I have reached out in the past being a mental first aider and not being a mental health first aider. So having to reach out to different support networks, whether that's a counsellor or whether that is someone that is, you know, mental health first aid trained. So yes, I've had to do that myself.
I have, quite occasionally, actually. Well, not in the recent times, but when I was more younger, I did. There was a certain time in my life where I was just unsure. And I think everyone reaches that point in their life where you're just unsure where you actually want to head with your life, like what you want to do and what you want to become, or how do you want to progress in life. And that was for me a while as well, that I was actively struggling with that. And it was for a time period of 2-3 years that I was just unsure, what do I want to do? And because you don't know what you want to do, anything that's being suggested to you sounds like more bothersome than anything that you might actually be interested in. So that was for me a thing as well. So when I was like 22, 23, was a 2-year gap in my life. I was like, yeah, I just don't know what I want to do. Until there was a point where I reached out. So I'm like, hey, this is where I'm struggling with. I just don't know what I want to do with my life or where I'm going. What can I do? What's the best tools that I can that you can provide for me that I can look into? Like, hey, this might be good for you. This might be useful. And one of those things actually came out that like, hey, why don't you try and find something abroad and see how that goes? And actually, that was for me the one trick that did it for me. I went abroad, I looked for a job abroad, and that's how I actually came with Life Plus. So that's helped me. For me, that was for me the support / tool that I needed to actively start doing something again that made me look forward to, okay, this is what I want. This is what I like to do. So that was the support I had, and definitely was useful for me back then.
For me, it was last year that I actually reached out for support. And it was for quite a big thing. Obviously, I'm not going to go into the ins and outs of what happened, you know. But for me, it was a really huge thing that happened in my life, and my brain just decided that it was going to shut off, and nothing was going to get in. You know, I wasn't going to listen to people. You know, I was really hurt by what happened, to the point, you know, I actually, you know, I'll be really honest, I went through a process where I actually couldn't feel, as strange as that sounds. So emotionally, yeah. There'd been a switch and it had switched off. I couldn't get upset. I couldn't get angry, nothing. I was numb. And it was really tough for me, really tough for my partner, because obviously if she needed me, I was there, don't get me wrong, but emotionally I wasn't. So it was very difficult. I was very difficult to kind of read and understand. And actually, thankfully for me, I did have, you know, I do have a really good support network, which I think is really important that people have, be that in the work environment or be that in your personal life. So I reached out to my manager, Tony, who obviously part of the podcast, and, you know, together we had some really interesting conversations. You know, she was very happy to get, you know, have a conversation, which is, you know, it can make you feel, you know, they're hard conversations to have, right? They're hard conversations to have with someone that can show their emotions, but with someone that's kind of shut off and, you know, in quite a lot of pain, like that's quite an incredible thing to be able to sit down and chat with someone. So I was able to go and actually talk to a professional about it. And here I am, over a year later, in a much better space. But I think the thing that I got out of that whole experience is that it's you're okay to feel like that. Like, it's okay to not be okay. It's really key that you talk to someone at the right time.
For me, yes, I have had a time where I reached out to not a mental health first aider, but a therapist actually directly. And surprisingly, even though there is not a big stigma for me around mental health, it was still kind of a jump to make. But yeah, it was very easy and very relaxed. And it wasn't like it is sometimes seen on TV where you're lying on that sofa and you're, yeah, I don't know. It was very, as if I'm talking to a doctor, really. And just sharing my thoughts. So I think it was very, very simple and easy thing to do. And it did help a lot.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. I think that's a really good point to highlight around being a mental health first aider. I think we all need to understand that sometimes there is a point where we have to seek that expert guidance, whether it be a counsellor or a therapist or whichever avenue it might be that we need to to, you know, support colleagues or friends with. And like you say, even though we might advise every day, actually when it's us doing that, it's kind of like, oh, okay, I haven't had to really look in the window of, you know, me before. And actually, what does that feel like? What does that look like? But I think the fact that, you know, we're talking about those experiences means that we can also understand the triggers and the signs for colleagues when that does happen. So I think, you know, thank you for sharing. I think it's good that those experiences are there and being shared.
And I think that's a key point, Tony, where you're saying that it's, you know what those skills are, but it's using them for yourself when you need them. And it's very hard to do that, but it's reaching out is the first big step.
That's the other thing, Pienaar, you touched on a really, really good point. You know, for us, for me, mental health absolutely is something that we should be talking about. It should feel natural, but we all know that we're a very long way from that sometimes. And I think, you know, as a business and as a group of mental health first aiders, the more that we can normalize those types of conversations, it will allow people to make it feel, you know, so much easier to reach out for help, which is exactly where we want to be. You know, we talked about, Pienaar, we talked about the pandemic and when it started. I think it actually started nearly 2 years ago now. But for me personally, my experiences as a mental health first aider really had to sort of change, given that we're in this virtual world. And natural reaction is, you know, when you see someone in distress, it's a natural, you know, you gravitate to them from a, you know, touching a hand or a shoulder, or it's natural to want that physical connection with somebody to reassure them and calm them and soothe them. How have you kind of found that virtual space from supporting, and what type of approaches have you used or found really work for you?
I mean, for me, obviously you do want to have that human touch again, right? And sometimes it is not as easy when you're meeting someone remotely to really spot maybe some signs from the body language and things like that. I don't know. I've just noticed that now I'm even more alert. I'm now listening much, much, much closer than I listened before, especially when there is like a Zoom meeting with different people together. And then I always look into the faces very closely and try to see if everyone is really doing well. And if it's very different, I have to say.
I agree. Being working from home and also having the flexibility to, you know, come into the office when needed as well, it's very difficult to pick up, you know, when someone does need that support. And you do have to focus on the body language quite a lot and the behaviours in the Zoom calls, and also being able to reach out to that person as well. Whereas when you're in the office, you're walking around, you can talk and you can pick up on things. Whereas when you're on Zoom, it is a little bit more difficult. And also trying to offer that support, and also for colleagues to reach out to, you know, people when they are in this, you know, pandemic that we're in at the moment, and they are, you know, they might be at home by themselves, they haven't got a support network, but it's that first step of reaching out to someone to help them.
So I think the support has changed to a certain extent now that you don't really see each other directly anymore. But the best approach that came out of it is that you have now a bit more freedom as well to engage with someone online quicker. So you can just use Zoom, you can use the phone, you can use the message, whichever they prefer. All three options are there straight away. So even though it has changed, it has turned out for great good as well. It is how the approach has been.
Have you found you need, so just because obviously being a senior within your team, do you have quite regular kind of one-to-ones with your team then through Zoom, just so that you can kind of see how they're getting on, or?
Yeah, definitely. So occasionally we used to have it scheduled in where you would just talk on a weekly basis, see how people are doing. Yeah. That has kind of, we let the reins loose a bit more of that, and it has more been of a free interval. If someone wants to talk, they can just request this. But also outside of the team, where I do that almost weekly or bi-weekly with the team to see how they're doing on an individual basis. Mm-hmm. Also, people from other teams can reach out as well to see if they can have a moment to talk about things, how they're going. Obviously, it's not always that they have to reach out. I reach out to them as well, even if I don't know anything of their background, just an occasional, hey, how are you doing, etc. does a huge, makes a huge difference for people already. And I think that's one of the things that has also been a great change, is that back in the office, you would like walk around to people and say, hey, how are you doing? And I think to continue that now as well, to message them in the morning or at any time, like, hey, how are you doing? It makes a change as well. It opens the conversation for people to know that they can reach out to you. Definitely people from outside the team or within the team, they request like for a one-to-one just to have a talk and see how things are going.
I think for me, it's those really, I don't know if it's basic or whether it's just a different approach or just sometimes it's, you know, it's easy when you know how, but even little things, you know, we always hear the, how are you doing? I'm fine. How are you really doing? Yeah, yeah, I'm fine. And someone said to me, I think they'd been on to a webinar or whatever it was. And one of the tips that came out of that was, we are all victim of that. Yeah, yeah, I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine, when we're not. And, you know, someone said, why don't you start? Why don't you say, okay, you're fine. Okay, what if that was a 1 out of 10? Where are you? And that for me was just so, gosh, that's a really different approach. And actually it made me think about, okay, well, if someone asked me that question, where am I? Okay, I'm probably a 7. Okay, well, why am I a 7? What is it that's making me feel like that? So I think sometimes from that virtual place, it's around how you position something and how you stimulate those conversations to moving from, yeah, I'm fine, to, okay, well, let's unpack that. Let's really make sure that you're fine.
I think it's also, as a mental health first aider, it's being open and communicating how, you know, you're feeling as well. You don't have to go into every detail, but it's just obviously sharing. And then people can understand, oh, it's not just me. Others are people are feeling like this. And then that opens up that conversation of, okay, so what have you been doing to help? And what are your coping mechanisms? And how do you make sure that, you know, your well-being is at the forefront of your mind and getting that work-life balance and everything? So I think it just opens up those conversations as well.
Yeah, absolutely, completely. I think that kind of leads me on nicely. I mean, I've talked a little bit about one of those kind of techniques that I've kind of flipped, if I need to, around asking questions in maybe a bit of a different way. But I guess, what would you say your kind of top tools and techniques are when you're supporting a colleague in the workplace, and what do you generally find kind of works best for you?
I have quite a big toolkit that I use. It depends on what I'm faced with.
Top two, maybe, Kelly.
Oh, dear. My most recent one, because it's more on the personal side, from, you know, my family and my loved ones, is they've actually got a Burn It book, which is for anxiety. So you can be brutally honest on this bit of paper and you can write in there exactly how you're feeling, what's making you anxious and, you know, maybe panicky or anything like that, but writing on it. And instead of just having it as a book and then just, oh, I'll write on another page, and then reading it and then starting to overthink and, oh yes, it feel like that, and you're not moving forward. So you tear that sheet of paper out of the lovely pretty book, I've been told, and then you burn it, obviously in a safe environment, please. And they burn it because it's a release, and you're letting that go, that anxiety go, and it just helps you move forward. And the more you do that, the more that's going to help you as well. So that's something that I've used recently, but that's more of on a personal side.
Because everyone, of course, is different. So everyone needs different tools and or different approach, less techniques on how to help them out, of course. I think it's the main importance is to actively listen to the person and see what they're actually sharing with you. I think it's best to take from that is, okay, so this is the best way that I can signpost you to something, or try and do this for yourself at home, just some techniques to help you out. Okay, so if you're dealing with this, then try some of these techniques to help you out to calm down, for example, or to distract yourself if you're feeling a moment that you need distraction.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's one thing that fits all, is there?
Okay, I have two that I want to actually talk about. One is very, very simple. And sometimes people think, well, that's not going to help, so leave me alone. But sometimes when you're really, really stressed, just smell on something really nice. For example, a slice of lemon, a fresh slice of lemon, maybe even squeeze it into a cup of water and then drink it, and then think of about really how it tastes and how it makes you feel and things like that. That at the end was something that is so simple and people did not believe in it. And then later on, they actually felt like, yeah, it did help actually. The other thing is that I personally really like is when there's like this kind of paranoia thing going on or anxiety, let's say, or you're overthinking something or you're having these thoughts where it's all negative. I just ask, or sometimes I even do that myself. You would say something like, I can't raise my arm. And while it's saying it, you raise your arm. I can't say the word point. And then you say the word point, obviously. And this way, I or you or anyone who's doing it can realize that, you know, thoughts are not necessarily the real life. And then that way you can kind of learn to distance from all of your thoughts that might be also too negative and not helpful at all.
Thank you, Pina. Yeah, sometimes it is the simpler things that actually, you know, can help us and change that. And, you know, our senses are a wonderful way of changing our mood and how we feel.
So I guess the next question is kind of the big hot topic within the mental health space. So I guess mainly for yourself and I, Martin, just to talk around mental health, just getting a male perspective on that kind of thing. As we know, it's a really hot topic. Do you want to start with that one?
Yeah, sure. I'll start with that one. As a guy, it has always been difficult to share your feelings or to talk to speak up about what's bothering you and what's struggling with you. And I think this goes way back, is because as a man, you were always taught that you can't cry or you can't share your emotions because that's a sign of weakness. Mm-hmm. And that has been going for decades, I would say. And of course, because it's coming back from decades ago, that's still being fostered into the day and age you are in now. And while that has been proved, so you now have more, like, there are activities for men specifically, they can go and join events/meetings to talk about their feelings and to share their mental health. It is still a bit of a stigma that men should not be able to share their feelings because it's still a sign of weakness, or you're not functioning well as a guy in society nowadays, because how can you have issues, right? So I think that's one of the important things that as a guy that you need to remember, that it is definitely okay for you to cry occasionally or to feel down or to feel upset, because at the end of the day, we all have feelings and we all struggle with our things. And that's why I think it's great that as a guy, I think it's more brave as a guy that you share your feelings nowadays, or that you cry about something, than that you hide them away, because then you're not doing yourself justice. While it's easier to say that you're okay, deep down, you know yourself that you're not. And you're doing yourself a disjustice by not saying that you're not okay. Because at the end of the day, what I've realized myself is it's better to open up and talk about things than to bottle it all up and somewhere have it explode inside you, and then things get worse, like you said earlier on. Like I said in the beginning, I think it's important just to speak up, because it's times have changed and it's better now than it used to be.
Yeah, I think I agree with all of that. And I think the biggest thing I got out of what you were saying is that bravery piece. I think, don't get me wrong, I think it's brave for anyone to talk about their mental health. But if we look at kind of the stigma that is around kind of men and I guess how we're socialized from quite an early age, you know, don't cry, I guess we're kind of already kind of automatically in our headspace, well, I have to be okay because I'm a man, like that's yeah. Almost like the rule, like the unwritten rule, right? But I think it's nice to see that a lot more conversations are started to be had within the mental health space with men, which is really, really positive. I think recently, so like when I was saying about last year, that was quite a tough time for me, because I sat in that space where I was like, oh, well, I'm a protector, I'm a carer, I'm a supporter. Like, I don't want to put that on my partner or my family. I don't want them to look at me and think, oh, there's something wrong with you, like you're ill or you're weak. And I think that was the biggest thing for me. So when actually I did reach out for help, that was really difficult. Really, really difficult, but very empowering at the same time. So although, you know, you don't want to, you might not necessarily be like, oh, no, I'm a man, I can't do it. I think actually doing it does empower you a little bit to become a little bit more in control of your emotions and what you're feeling. And I think that's really important. I think if we can all kind of have a little bit more understanding of how we feel, then I think we'll have kind of be much better within our mental health space.
I guess we've maybe touched on this a little bit from some of the points that that we've made. Obviously, we're all mental health first aiders here. And one of the biggest things that I've always been quite a big champion of is, yes, it's okay for businesses to have mental health first aiders, that's great, but how do we look after the mental health first aiders? How do we look after the people looking after us, right? So I guess for me, I would love to hear how you look after your own well-being. I know for me, it might be that I'll get on the treadmill for half an hour, or I'll log off and I'll put some music on just to kind of completely take me away from the day and uplift my mood. So I guess it would be interesting to hear from you around what's your go-to, where's your happy place, I guess.
I think that's a really key point, Tony, because being a mental health first aider, it's being self-aware. You need to be aware of your own well-being. If you are going through some difficult times yourself personally, and someone approaches you and they need their support from you, can you actually help that person? And it is okay to say, can I ask someone else to help? And that is okay, because, you know, we can only fill our bucket up so much, and, you know, we need to release that sometimes. So sometimes I've had to reach out to one of my mental health first aid colleagues and say, would you be able to assist this person? Because I haven't got the mental capacity myself, and I'm not in the right frame of mind to take any more on. And it's okay to say that. It might feel a little bit weird me saying that, but it is okay. You need to be self-aware of that. And I think that's one of the big steps as a mental health first aider. But then on the other side, it's okay, so how can I release that? And it is like Tony, like you're saying, you know, what do you do for your own stress and release that, you know, valve of that bucket? And me personally, I go to the gym, I meditate. I also make sure that, you know, I get plenty of fresh air as well. So going for a walk, but it's also speaking to my loved ones, you know, my friends, my family, and talking to them about how I feel, so they're aware, so they can support me as well. And it's being open and honest with your network there as well.
I have actually recently started doing some meditation, and I find that helps me. I know it's not going to help everyone. It's a very holistic approach. But for me, I found that, you know, sitting down for, you know, 3, 5, 10, 20 minutes and just sort of just being in my own headspace kind of helps me.
But for me, it's very much music. It does a lot for me. And it's just like, okay, so you go outside, you put in your earphones and you go listen to some music. And I think that's the main trick that always has done it for me. Music has always been very much of a passion for me. So I think that it always has also been unknowingly has become my coping mechanism for that as well, or my tool to basically recharge again. So music definitely has done the trick for me. And then, of course, if you combine it with walking or cleaning or whatever you feel like doing in combination of, I think that's what does the trick for me.
I was going to say exercise is another thing that I've quite got into. Like, I do quite a lot of cycling. So that's been my kind of my second release to the meditation, so I can get behind that. And music is a powerful, powerful thing, isn't it? So
definitely.
Yeah, I can get behind that one as well.
I completely agree with Kelly. It's really important to have your people around you that you know are there for you and are happy to give you some support. For me personally, I also like to, you know, do some activities like my hobbies. I really like to draw and paint. So that's what I'm doing. And also when the pandemic started, I started to teach playing the guitar myself. So that was quite helpful in the mental health part of things. But also it was good to kind of forget about that weird thing going on around the world. Yeah. And obviously afterwards, when you spend a lot of time with that, learning new things is always something that can make you feel really good about yourself. You can be proud of yourself. For me, that helps a lot.
That's a really good point. I think having something to really kind of focus on and put your energies into and know that you're going to get something kind of positive and rewarding back from that activity or, you know, task that you're doing, whether it be to sit back and look at a picture that you've painted, or whether it be to be able to play a few more chords than you could the week before, you know, and put them together and make them sound good, or, you know, walk a bit further and faster than you did you know, the day before, I think when you can see that positive return, it really does make a difference. And, you know, I think I've recently worked with a colleague in a meditation with something that they enjoyed doing and really found the benefit in just having that space where you can be completely in your own thoughts and push them aside and just have that quiet time and have some peace. We've touched on various different strategies and ways that that's, you know, our happy place, that's our go-to. It is so different for each individual. So what works for one person, you know, it doesn't always work for the next person, but I think sometimes it's about just being brave and about trying new things and thinking, okay, I'm not sure this is me, but actually it might work. So I think there is an element of being brave to say, I'll give it a go.
I think it's also making sure, going back to what I said earlier, it's sharing what you do as well to release with, you know, with that pressure. Because, you know, everyone's got different ways, whether that's, you know, drawing, painting, running. People might not like exercising. So it's looking at different, you know, options. Some people like to read because they can just switch off completely. So there's so many different things that, you know, people like, but it's making them aware of them, because sometimes you forget about them, don't you?
Yeah, and it's finding the one that, you know, is for you. Sometimes you have to try a few things before you get to that point of that's the one that worked for me. So yeah, I think it's good to just get out there and see what works and sometimes what doesn't. You know, I've tried things and thought, well, no, that's actually frustrating me more than it is helping me.
So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it is very personal, very kind of individual.
And I think also sometimes it is pushing people outside of their comfort zone when they're doing things like that. So, you know, you've been at home during this pandemic by yourself, possibly, or, you know, been in the house and you've not been out. So it's, what can I do at home with what I've got here to help me? Whether that's, you know, have you got a garden? Can you grow in the garden and maybe, you know, take up gardening, work on a project at home, whether that's, you know, DIY or something. So there's lots of different things that we can do, but it's talking about it and understanding what those options are.
And Tony, you know, I think the worst ideas and thoughts and the most annoying thoughts, they come in the evening, don't they, when you just want to sleep. And I think Kelly also has already touched a little bit on it. She said, or she mentioned reading, which I also found for myself that helps so much, because normally I just read during the day and not before going to sleep. But yeah, I've tried to do that because sometimes I just can't stop thinking about work, for example, or thinking about something terrible that happened to me, or where I just felt so embarrassed about myself 5 years ago. And obviously I can't do anything about it anymore. And then, yeah, I just found, even when I only read like 10 pages or so from my favorite book, just before I go to sleep, it just doesn't only make my eyes more tired, but my brain just focuses on something completely different. And then I totally forget about what I was thinking before that was bothering me so much. So yeah, that was the other thing.
I think that's key, Pinal. It is. You get to the end of the day and you're starting to switch off. Your mind does go away with you, and completely agree. And the other key thing is, I try and encourage people, is, you know, half an hour before you go to bed, do not go on any electronical devices, because sometimes that can make it worse. But, you know, we all have our own coping mechanisms. But yeah, definitely reading, because you've got that happy thought of, you know, and you're in that book and thinking of something different to what was worrying you beforehand.
So I guess for me, we're very fortunate at Life Plus that we have a, you know, a really great community of mental health first aiders. And as Kelly, I think we talked about at the very start of the podcast, you know, we allow those opportunities to come up and for colleagues to put their hand up and say, yes, I absolutely want to get behind mental health and I do want to become a first aider. If someone was listening to this and thinking about becoming a mental health first aider, what advice would you give them to make that move and get that, you know, get that course booked?
I'd 100% encourage people to, you know, become a first aider if that's something that they're passionate about, because, you know, something myself, I'm very passionate about it. But as I've mentioned before, you need to be self-aware. Are you ready to become a mental health first aider because of the different, I say cases, but, you know, different things that you're faced with from, you know, different colleagues or friends or loved ones, because you can use this outside of work as well. It's making sure that you're aware of those different things that will come to you and how to deal with them, but then also how to deal with that yourself and not taking all of that on and having that release valve, you know, whether it is, you know, exercise, you know, all the different coping mechanisms that we talked about. But it's also having that person that you can speak to as well. You don't obviously share, you know, what you've been discussing with other colleagues, but it's just a case of how you're feeling, so you can release that as well.
I totally agree with Kelly. I think sometimes it's easy to forget that while you really, really do want to help others, you also have to remember that you have to take care of yourself first so that you can actually help others. Yeah, that is a big advice that I would give to someone who's thinking about becoming a mental health first aider. But definitely, I would also encourage that, because it's just something that can also make you quite happy as well, just by knowing that you can help someone, just by being there, just by listening. It's something that you don't really get from too many things.
I think the most important thing to keep in mind is that you should be able to know that you cannot help everyone. And with that in mind is that you're not there to fix everyone. You're there to help them for some release, or to help them guide into the right direction that they need to go to receive the proper advice or help that they need. So the main point is not beat yourself up over something if you realize or feel that you cannot fix someone, because at the end of the day, that's not your task. You're there to help them, to be listening ear, and to guide them further. And I think that's the most important thing you want to keep in mind, because if you realize that, it makes you also in a much better headspace to actually able to help someone. And I think that also gives you fulfillment for yourself at the end of the day, because you know that you've been able to be someone's support and to guide them into the right direction.
And I think just to add to that as well, I think we've kind of touched on it as we've gone. Obviously, before kind of going into that role, make sure that you do have a good kind of coping mechanism, or you have, you know exactly who you can go to for your support if you need it as well. I think, and Martijn, you touched on it earlier as well about, you know, if you don't look after yourself first, how are you going to be expected to look at, or, you know, support or look after someone else? And, you know, like you said, it's very much that guidance piece. So as long as you've got someone that can guide and support you, or you have them mechanisms, you know, like we said, go turn into music, meditation, exercise, whatever it is, making sure that you've got that in your back pocket as well, just ready to kind of release that, I think we said, like that funnel.
Yeah, I think for me, and, you know, I say this quite a lot when it comes to being a mental health first aider, I think the one thing that I would say, you have to be comfortable being uncomfortable, because actually, you know, you're sometimes thrown into situations where you have to allow silence. You have to, you know, Pinar, you've mentioned this, Callie, you've mentioned it. The biggest key is that active listening, and active listening is a real skill. It really, really is. So being able to listen, as human beings, our natural mechanism is to listen, to respond. So we'll start to process what's being said, and we'll immediately start to craft a response. When it comes to mental health first aid, it really isn't about crafting that response. It's about really digesting what that person is saying to you, and actually thinking about, okay, what does that mean? What line of questioning do I need to take now to make sure that I can support this person in the best way possible? And allowing, you know, at times there to be silence, because that will allow that person to feel safe to then maybe express a little bit more, or to talk about another, you know, another topic. So I think for me, as a mental health first aider, we absolutely have to be comfortable being uncomfortable sometimes.
I think it's also a big part that you said there, Tony, is sometimes people just want to be heard. They just want someone just to sit there and listen. So just sitting there and, you know, yourself being quiet just for that person to talk and having those awkward silences actually makes that person feel better as well, because they've been able to talk about it. And it's, you know, instead of it just piling up, they've been able to obviously share that with someone, and that's okay as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, the amount of conversations that I've had with colleagues, and it might be that, you know, my natural reaction is, okay, where would you like me to take this? How can I support you moving forward? And you know what? Sometimes the response is simply, I don't need you to do anything. I know what I need to do. I feel so much better now that I have just been completely, you know, without any, you know, bias or prejudice to talk to you and just get it all off my chest. That's helped. And actually, you know, sometimes you're right. That's all people need.